It is not September 1st. It is September 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the president's defenders make the rounds over the weekend as the impeachment inquiry into Trump's push for Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden.
Trump didn't do that. He called him up and he said, I want you to investigate these charges of corruption.
The nation's oldest living former president is turning 95. Also ahead, the American pop star that just keeps exploding in popularity. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, the weekend was not a respite for Donald Trump, whose presidency is now overshadowed by the real threat of impeachment. It was sparked by revelations of Trump's July 25th call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, as well as a whistleblower's complaint alleging the U.S. president pressured his counterpart to investigate the family of former Vice President Joe Biden, a top Democratic rival, to challenge Trump's reelection. Many of the main players appeared on the weekend news programs, including House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, who's heading up the impeachment inquiry. He said Sunday that he expects the whistleblower to testify very soon.
I would certainly hope that others, in particular those that the whistleblower was referring to, would look at the courage that he or she has demonstrated and follow that example, because we are dependent on people of good conscience coming forward, particularly now, given that we have such an unscrupulous president.
Well, Trump's allies did erupt in a surge of second-guessing across the Sunday talk shows, suggesting the White House strategy is unclear against the stiffest challenge to his presidency. His personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, told Sky News he'd like to testify to Congress over the impeachment allegations facing the president.
I will consider it. I have to be guided by my client, frankly. I'm a lawyer. It's his privilege, not mine. If he decides that he wants me to testify, of course I'll testify, even though I think Adam Schiff is an illegitimate chairman.
Former Trump administration Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert told ABC's This Week he's deeply disturbed by what's happening.
It is a bad day and a bad week for this president and for this country if he is asking for political dirt on an opponent. But it looks to me like the other matter that's far from proven is whether he was doing anything to abuse his power and withhold aid in order to solicit such a thing.
Bossert says he has urged Trump to confront the crisis at hand and to get past his fury over the probe of Russian election interference.
I honestly believe this president has not gotten his pound of flesh yet from past grievances on the 2016 investigation. I believe he and his legal team had been looking into this probably even prior to Joe Biden announcing that he would run for president. And they're continuing to focus on everything they can in their belief, understandably in this case, that the president was wrongly accused of colluding with Russia the first time around. If he continues to focus on that white whale, it's going to bring him down. Enough. The investigation's over. There was no evidence of collusion. He's won, and he should take that victory and move forward.
Well, joining us now to discuss all of it and what it all means is Alan Lichtman. He is a political historian and professor at American University in Washington. Thank you for being with us, Professor. In a series of tweets on Sunday, the president said he deserved to meet his accuser, as well as whoever provided the whistleblower information, and he called for investigations into Democratic efforts.
Only when you can't deal with the substance of the issue, you attack the messengers. It's not working already. 55% of the American people in the most recent poll favor an impeachment inquiry. That's way up from where it had been just a few weeks ago. And 42% already think the president should be impeached just based on what we already know, and we're just a few days into the investigation.
The whistleblower is apparently going to testify before Congress at some point this week. Is there any way the president can stop that or block it?
Well, the president can huff and he can puff, but he has no legal way of stopping the whistleblower from testifying. The whistleblower was not involved in any privileged conversation with the president himself and has a perfect right to testify before the Congress about what he knows.
Who else has legal liability here besides President Trump?
Well, I think there are a host of people who have legal liability. There is something called conspiracy against the United States. That was one of the charges against Paul Manafort, the president's former campaign chair. And if a number of people are involved in illicit activities that undermine the security of the United States and are standing around the world, do so knowingly and willingly, they can be charged with conspiracy against the United States. Would, of course, include Rudy Giuliani. By the way, it's just the president's personal lawyer, had no business conducting any kind of diplomacy. And anyone else who's involved. The president several times mentioned Attorney General Bill Barr in his talk with Ukrainian President Zelensky. Barr has denied any knowledge of this, but who knows? And there may be officials within the State Department involved. And I've also seen a report that several other private lawyers working with Rudy Giuliani, all of these people have severe legal liability. What I heard was that the White House lawyers were the ones who put the conversation with the Ukrainian president, as well as conversations to murderous dictators, Vladimir Putin of Russia, MBS of Saudi Arabia, in this super top secret system reserved only for the most sensitive information, like the location of the spies. The law says you cannot super classify information just because it's politically sensitive. Lawyers should not be doing this. Only national security officials should be the ones authorizing classification.
Since President Trump got into office, or maybe even before, he's really had this hatred of the media, deeming them the enemy of the people and fake news. But if it were to be that this president was ultimately removed from office, is it safe to say that the press had a lot to do with that because of what they brought out from the whistleblower and the truth-telling that it is doing?
You know, in attacking the press, the administration has undermined one of the foremost pillars of conservatism in the United States. What conservatives believe in is conserving the institutions that have served us well over time, and that would include the free press. And, of course, again, he's taken a page out of the Nixon playbook in blaming things on the press. But if, in fact, he is impeached and removed from office, like the resignation of Richard Nixon, the press will get enormous credit for bringing out so many of the misdeeds of this president. And in the end, investigative journalism, which is so essential to our democracy, as Thomas Jefferson once said, given a choice between a free government and a free press, I take a press. We can't have a free government without a free press. One of the first things every dictator does is muzzle the press.
So because of this whole whistleblower and this whole Ukraine situation, it came to light about secretly hiding these conversations the president has had, which have included a conversation that he had with Saudi prince and also with two very high-profile Russians in the Oval Office, where he essentially said the equivalent is, we do it all the time, so it's totally okay that you interfered in our election. Would all of that be within the guidelines of what the Democrats are saying they're only focusing on Ukraine? Because this stuff is coming up, and it's pretty serious if it's true.
You never know where an impeachment inquiry will go. The inquiry into Richard Nixon started out about covering up a break-in at the Democratic Party headquarters in Watergate. It went way beyond that. It went into illegal campaign contributions, illegal wiretapping of government officials and reporters. And already the investigation of Ukraine has uncovered critical elements way beyond that. It may be much more important. The Trump administration not only deep-sixed the conversation with the Ukrainian, they deep-sixed conversations with Russians, with the Saudi royal family, and with Vladimir Putin. There may be much worse, more damning statements by Donald Trump in those conversations, even than there was with the conversation with the Ukrainian president. What did he say to the Saudis about the outrageous murder of an American resident and writer for the Washington Post? What did he say to the Russians about the sanctions and about protecting Ukraine? We already have reporting that one outrageous thing he said, maybe not to Putin, but to high Russian officials, was he didn't care about Russian intervention, manipulation of our democratic elections, because falsely the United States does the same thing, essentially inviting the Russians to manipulate the 2020 elections. That itself not only undermines our democracy, our national security, but it may well be an outrageous breach of law as well. We need to get...
Do you think they will come out in this and be a part of it?
Usually everything comes out in the end in an impeachment inquiry. Donald Trump will fight tooth and nail to his last breath to keep all of those conversations secret, but the American people need to know.
All right. That is Professor Alan Lichtman. He is a political historian and professor at American University in Washington. The U.S. Senate has voted again to block President Trump's national emergency declaration and his plan to divert $3.6 billion from military projects to extend wall construction along the U.S.-Mexico border. Despite the setback, Trump could win a larger narrative on border security, an important issue for his supporters going into next year's election. White House correspondent Patsy Wittakuswara has more.
It's a core campaign promise, one that President Donald Trump was eager to highlight during his trip to San Diego this month.
It'll be over 400 miles, and we think we can get it close to 500 miles by the end of next year, depending on certain terrain conditions.
Dissatisfied by limited funds approved by Congress, the administration sought more wall money by siphoning $3.6 billion of Department of Defense construction projects, such as schools and military bases. The Senate recently voted to block the plan for the second time, but the chamber lacks the votes to override a presidential veto, which Trump is likely to do again.
The president is engaged in a calculated attempt to aggravate regional migration dynamics for domestic political gain at the expense of our national security.
Meanwhile, Trump has pushed Central American countries to prevent their citizens from migrating north and to take in asylum seekers denied protection in the U.S.
We actually make deals with Mexico and with Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, and we're doing it with them instead of with our Congress. But we're doing it.
Border security is a key issue for Trump as he seeks re-election in 2020.
If you are a base core Trump supporter, you like the fact that the president has promised that we would secure our border, that we would have less illegal immigration into the country, and that it would have an impact on the wages of the average voter.
Bipartisan Policy Center immigration analyst Cristobal Ramon says Trump may be overpromising on how much border wall will actually be built in 2020 and questions whether the agreements with Central American countries can be implemented. The success of Trump's border initiatives may hinge on whether migrant arrivals continue a recent downward trend.
The key thing moving forward is, are we going to see the numbers kind of stay moderately low, or are they going to keep spiking back up?
In the meantime, Trump relies on political messaging to project a strong stance on immigration.
His political language is all about visuals. So I think that as long as he's able to convey that to his base, I think that that's something, you know, it's a victory for him.
An earnest effort and a perception of progress are important to the president's core supporters.
Ultimately, the voters will see him as working hard to keep his promises, which makes him unusual among politicians.
Patsy Wittakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Voting is over, but now the real challenges are beginning in Afghanistan. Russia's opposition has staged a new Moscow rally after a summer of protests. More violence grips Hong Kong ahead of China's National Day. And in Israel, Netanyahu and Gantz trade the blame over a breakdown in Israel coalition talks. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Afghan officials are counting votes after Saturday's presidential election that was held amid repeated threats by the Taliban and fear of post-election chaos. Better performance by electoral and security authorities notwithstanding, fears remain that disagreements on the result might engulf the country in a destabilizing fight for power. VOA's Ayesha Tanzim reports from Kabul.
Empty polling stations and empty ballot boxes. These were the scenes VOA teams found in the capital, Kabul, and many parts of the country Saturday. Unofficial estimates indicate the voter turnout will be a historic low. Extreme threats from the Taliban, voter dissatisfaction with candidates, and confusion over whether the twice-delayed elections will be held this time kept campaigns from gaining steam. Now that they are held, given Afghanistan's track record, many fear a dispute over results that could devolve into a full-blown crisis. Some candidates, like former warlord turned politician Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, seem to already be preparing for such a scenario.
The elections will result in increased violence. No one will accept the results other than those who were involved in widespread fraud. Naturally, it will result in a crisis.
The process of counting votes in Afghanistan is long. Ballot boxes have to arrive from far-off places with little or no communication lines. The preliminary results are not expected for a few weeks. Only then will they get to any complaints.
The law is very clear. If there is fraud, candidates and their followers can go to the Election Complaints Commission and register their complaints. The commission will decide upon them, and we are committed to abide by its decision.
Despite the introduction of more robust systems this time around to avoid fraud, including taking fingerprints and pictures of voters, allegations of fraud have already emerged from certain quarters. If more voices join ranks, this could wreak havoc to an already fragile system. Both election and security officials insist that they're ready to deal with any scenario, and everyone is hoping for a smooth transition. But Afghanistan has a long history of post-election chaos. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Kabul.
Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter turns 95 on October 1st. He has lived longer than any president in U.S. history. As VOA's Kane Farabaugh reports, Mr. Carter reaches the historic milestone while engaging with new and younger audiences as he continues to work toward his lifelong goals.
Please help me welcome
4 years after battling cancer,
the 39th president of the United States, Jimmy Carter.
And 4 months after falling and breaking his hip, requiring weeks of intense physical therapy,
I will agree to answer questions.
Former President Jimmy Carter showed no signs of fatigue or pain as he stood unassisted.
What book did you read that changed your life?
And answered question,
how should we fix the increasing polarization between parties in our country?
After question,
as a peanut farmer, what are your thoughts on almond butter?
From students at an Emory University town hall event he's participated in every year for 38 years.
We only have peanut butter in our house.
I think that it's a problem when people overly lionize political figures, but I do have a great deal of respect for Jimmy Carter.
Gianluigi Zaninelli, a first-time town hall participant, says he came with an open mind about the one-term Democratic president.
I've heard a great many conservatives be incredibly critical of Jimmy Carter.
But Zaninelli says that comes from Carter's tumultuous time in the White House 4 decades ago, well before he was born.
But because of the good works that he's been doing over the course of the last 30 or more years, we have a high opinion of him as a human being, because what is indisputable is that Jimmy Carter cares about other people and devotes himself to service.
I would say I still adhere to the advice my school principal gave me. We must accommodate changing times, and these are really changing times, but cling to principles that never do change. Principles like telling the truth and helping other people.
In an exclusive interview with VOA, the 95-year-old Nobel Peace Prize laureate says his age may finally be catching up to him.
I used to travel to Africa 3 or 4 times a year and always to China and so forth. So I've cut back on my foreign travel, but I'm still, you know, involved in the Carter Center.
A center he leads with his wife, Rosalind, which wages peace, fights disease, and builds hope around the world through programs including election monitoring and guinea worm eradication. But recent setbacks, including new transmission of the worm between dogs, could jeopardize his wish for eradication in his lifetime.
And we think we've prevented maybe 80 million people from having guinea worm that would have had it otherwise. So we've made very good progress, but we still have a little ways to go.
President Carter is a kind of secular saint in America today.
Emory University history professor Joe Crispino says Carter has set a high standard for what is expected of U.S. presidents once they leave office.
His longevity, his commitment to doing as much good as he can do in the time that he has on earth is really a remarkable model, not just for his fellow Americans, but for people around the globe.
A globe partially transformed by the work President Carter says he and Mrs. Carter will continue to do for as long as they can. Kane Farabaugh, VOA News, Atlanta, Georgia.
And coming up, it seems there is no cap on Taylor Swift's success and what hundreds of thousands of people are hoping to find on a massive treasure hunt. It's all on today's International Edition, back in 1 minute.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. About 350,000 treasure hunters from all over the world have been scouting out a large area in the U.S. Rocky Mountains, stretching from northern New Mexico to Montana, looking for a hidden treasure. As the story goes, all but one needs to find the loot is to decipher the 9 clues in a poem written by wealthy art collector and entrepreneur Forrest Fenn, who says he collected and hid the treasure years ago. Its lore became wildly popular after he'd written a book called The Thrill of the Chase, talking about his life and the treasure. While many believe the treasure is real, others think it's just a hoax. VOA's Penelope Pulu visited the area and spoke with Fenn about the meaning of it all.
This is the spot I was talking about.
For 5.5 years, Sasha Johnston has been looking for the hidden treasure supposedly stashed in the Rocky Mountains by collector and entrepreneur Forrest Fenn.
I have searched approximately 300 times, but I don't really keep count. I just did an estimate.
We are at the Black Canyon campground north of Santa Fe, New Mexico.
This would be the starting point.
If true, the treasure could be anywhere between this opening all the way up to Montana. So what keeps Johnston and so many like her trying?
I have become more in tune with nature. And so I found it to be an incredibly rewarding experience. So that drives me. But on another level, I think I have made progress in figuring out the clues of Forrest Fenn's poem.
Begin it where warm waters halt and take it in the canyon down. Not far, but too far to walk. Put in below the home of Brown.
Forrest Fenn says he built the treasure chest full of gems, gold, and jewels and wrote the poem with the clues after he received a dire cancer diagnosis in 1988.
If I was going to die, I was just going to give other people the same opportunity that I've had.
He ended up beating cancer and kept the chest of valuable collectibles in his possession until 2010. When the recession was in full swing in America.
I wanted to give people hope. Maybe there is a pot of gold at the end of your rainbow if you'll go out there and look for it.
He says he was 79 years old when he hid that treasure chest.
It's not in a dangerous place.
At his home in Santa Fe, New Mexico, Fenn is surrounded by art collections he amassed during his lifelong journey. A fishing guide in Yellowstone since the age of 9, Fenn lived a life as extraordinary as his treasure. He is a decorated fighter pilot who volunteered in 1968 to go to Vietnam. He says he flew hundreds of combat missions and cheated death on a number of occasions.
5 or 6. I crash-landed one time in Vietnam. I was shot down, ejected from an F-100 in Laos.
Fenn kept a piece of the wreckage. He considers himself a man who has always lived on the edge. The treasure represents him.
This is his legacy.
A goldsmith by trade, Mark Howard, has known Fenn for more than 25 years. He has also been looking for the treasure for more than 9 years.
I'm a goldsmith. I would love to have supply of gold that I didn't have to pay $1,500 an ounce for.
But lack of tangible proof of the treasure's whereabouts and its potential recovery has some questioning its existence.
Several people that I've talked to had seen it in his vault before he placed it. It was jaw-dropping.
The treasure hunt is believed to have caused tourism to soar in Santa Fe.
The city gave me a proclamation because the occupancy rate in the motels in Santa Fe was up 6% 2 years in a row, and nobody could figure out why.
But it has also claimed some lives.
I would urge people to know where you're going. The mounds can be terribly unforgiving to those who don't respect what they are and what they can do.
Does he believe people are close to finding it?
It's possible my treasure chest could be found this afternoon, or it could be 100 years or 500 years. Who knows?
Johnson is not deterred either.
I don't need other people to believe that Forrest Fenn hid a treasure, and I don't need them to believe that it could be found. I need to believe that, because I go out there with that same excitement and that same zest for life every single time. So I'm okay with looking for a hidden treasure, even if it's not there.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Well, there seems to be no limit to Taylor Swift's success. Just weeks after the release of her seventh studio album, Lover, it has gone platinum with more than a million sales in the U.S. And it's also exploding worldwide with at least 3 billion streams since its release. The project is also significant in that it is Swift's first album where she has complete control of the recordings after a long legal feud with her former record label. Have I known you 20 seconds, 20 years? Can I go where you? And you've been listening to International Edition. That's going to do it for our show today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Justin Thwaites. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day. Lover. We could let our friends crash in the living room. This is our place, we make the call. And I'm highly suspicious that everyone who sees you wants you. I've loved you 3 summers now, honey, but I want them all. Can I go?
VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bertel. Afghan officials are counting votes after Saturday's presidential election that was held.